Tonight we're going to start a new topic. Probably will take us maybe a couple of weeks. At least tonight will be more of an intro to the concept known as Hagolas Kelim. This time of the year, as we get close to the Yom Tov of Pesach, but it's not really only related to Pesach. Kashering, or what we call Hagolas Kelim, is something that happens all the time. You drop the wrong fork in here, and this, that, and the other. That's when you have to start talking about kashering. How do you fix, how do you purge something from one kli to another? It's perhaps more relevant, and that's where one of the places where the Shulchan Aruch discusses it at length, happens to be in Hilchos Pesach. Because in Hilchos Pesach, it used to be very common. Today it's not so common, and we'll discuss a little bit about it this evening. Today we just have Pesach dishes and Chumazdik dishes. That wasn't always the case. Klai Yisrael wasn't always that wealthy. So they used to actually have to kasher. Can you imagine, besides for all the shopping and all the cleaning, you then have to kasher all your kelim. I don't think they had as many kelim as we have today, but you had to kasher whatever kelim you had. That was another avoida. Today it's almost obsolete kashering. You'll find here and there in communities, they'll have a public kashering. It's not so popular anymore today. First of all, they have a lot of very good throwaway. You go to Amazing Savings, you can get terrific plastic. It looks real, it looks fancy. It's you know, sturdy, it's expensive, you got to pay for it, but that's why a lot of people don't kasher today. And we'll see, there might even be a halachic movement that says it's probably better not to kasher and just to put away your chametz dik dishes. But the concept of kashering, also known as Hagolas Kelim, happens all the time. Now, there's three times where a person, in theory, would have to kasher something. Either milchiks to fleishiks, fleishiks to milchiks, which is the most common case. You have a milchik, a knife that you use for milchiks, and accidentally you used it for fleishiks. So now you got a problem on your hands. Well, again, we'll discuss more all the details, and now you got to figure out how do you fix it. That's the most common. The second, probably most common one, would be before Pesach. You have all these chametz dikah dishes, and you have this terrific knife that, and whatever it is, you have a terrific spoon, a terrific bowl, you have this great grill pan, and it works so well for chametz, you decided, I want to use it for Pesach. But you got to kasher it first. So how do you kasher it to purge the chametz out of it? And the third one, perhaps the most not likely, bizman hazeh, is if you actually bought a pot from a non-Jewish person. Today we buy fresh pots. We go to Bed Bath & Beyond, and we buy new, unused pots. Not always was that the case. It used to be to go to a flea market, you go to a garage sale, and you buy pots and pans, which you still can do today. There's nothing halachically wrong with it. You can go buy a pot and a pan from the guy, but you just then have to figure out how are you going to kasher it. So there's three types of cases of where there's isser that gets absorbed into your kli. It's either chometz and Pesach, then there's milchiks versus fleishiks, and the last one could be like, you know, treif. The guy had a grill pan where you used to grill bacon on it, and now you want to buy it to grill upon your kosher hatl. So those are the three major times in life where you'd be presented with kashering a utensil. Again, the first two are the most common. The last one is perhaps a little less common. Where does this all come from? What is this all about? Now, the beauty of this concept of Hagolas Kelim, it's not something that was made up by Chazal, it was actually found in the Torah. But what's unique about it, and this is just all part of the intro, that when we talk about kashering, there's two things you have to keep in mind. There's something called blius, and there's something called mamoshes. Mamoshes means there's actually some substance there. You have a pot, and this is very relevant for Pesach, you want to talk about kashering your pot. You had a pot that you made the whole year long, you used to make noodles. Now noodles, sometimes some of the noodles sticks to the bottom of the pot. It's hard to get it off. So even before you can discuss kashering it, you have to make sure there's no actual noodles left embedded into the wall. Those are called mamoshes. Once you got rid of the mamoshes, then all you're left with is what's called in Hebrew the blius, the absorption. Things get absorbed into the walls of the pot through a couple different methods. One of the most common methods that we'll discuss this evening is through heat. When you cook something over heat, the heat allows that food to its taste to get absorbed into the walls. Then when you will re-cook this pot, that taste will come out. And we have a principle based in the Gemara called Ta'am Ke'ikr. The taste of the food is like the food itself. Even though, if I have a pot right now, there's no chametz in the pot. But since I used it to cook chametz, so the taste of the chametz gets absorbed, gets embedded into the walls, and then when I will reuse this pot to cook, that taste will come out and go into the food, and tam ki ikr will then affect the food. This is a very big machlokes we're showing him. Taisus himself, Taisus and Abayi Zara, is tam ki ikr midiraisa or is tam ki ikr midirabanan? Is this concept of absorptions a deraisa lover or only a derabanan lover? That's a discussion amongst the Baalei HaTosfos. The Gemara has a whole discussion. Where exactly do we learn this from? Tam Ke'ikr. Where is that learned from is the discussion. This is very negated to Pesach. There are some people that make the argument that since I have chametz absorptions in the pots of my walls, in the walls of my pot, I have to sell that to the guy. So there are those that, before Pesach, sell that to the guy. There's no reason why you should have to sell that to the guy as long as you're not going to be cooking with them, because you can't get any access to them. And my humble opinion, what price do you put on absorptions in the wall? I know you can buy everything on Amazon, but I'm pretty sure there's no price for buying the absorptions of the walls of a pot. Now, if you're going to sell the kli to the guy, you're going to have tefilas kalim problems, as we spoke about when we did the sugya of tefilas kalim. So that's just a little bit of the background of what we're talking about when we talk about kasher and kalim. Where does this all come from? So it comes from the Torah. In Parshas Matnah, they say, number one, the Torah tells us that after Klal Yisrael went to war, they came back with all the booty. They came back with all the stuff that they conquered from the goyim. What did they conquer from the goyim? They conquered pots and pans. So the pasuk tells us, "Vayimel Elazar Hakohen al Anshei Hatzava." Elazar Hakohen told to the men of the army, "Habayim lamelchama." This is the rules. These are the rules. You came back with all these pots and pans. Before you start cooking anything in it, you got to know the rules. What are the rules? It's important, because believe me, the next week we'll talk about which materials can be kashered and which materials can't be kashered. Not everything can be kashered and not everything can be absorbed. So we'll have to get to it. But what is the Torah list? The Torah says only gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. Only those. So those clearly are okay by the Torah to be in this parsha. What do you do? Call Dover Asher Yovei Be'esh. Anything that came in contact with fire, Tavir Be'esh. Pass it through fire. Vitoher. And then it becomes clear. There's a very, very important rule when talking about kashering. And the rule is Kibloye Kach Poltei. If you want to know how do I get the absorption out of my pot, you got to figure out how it got into the pot. The way it came in is the way it's going to go out. So, says the Torah, Kol asher taviru be'esh. If this utensil was used over a hot fire, it was a grill pan, or it was a spit, or was something that was used over an open fire, then taviru be'esh. Send it through fire. You're going to use fire, because fire is what got it absorbed. Fire is going to get the absorption out. Ach b'meinida yischata, however, b'meinida yischata, which might be an allusion to the idea of tevilas kalim. And we learned the sugya of tefilas kalim. It's in this parsha as well, is the concept of anytime you buy a new utensil from a guy, even if it was never touched, never used, there's no absorptions in the wall, one is still obligated to put the kli in the mikvah to make it holy. The Ritzvah writes, quoting the Yerushalmi, Maseches Avodah Zarah, that the reason why we tevil kalim is because the kli is going through a change. It's going from a lower person to a higher person. It was owned by a guy, he's a lower person, it's moving up its ranking in society, and now is Jewish property. So you have to tevil the kli. V'chol asher lo yovah be'esh, and anything that didn't come in contact with fire, so tavi remai, so pashup shan the pasuk, which is not the way Rashi learns the Chumash, it would mean that if, let's say, it didn't come in contact with fire, so what did it come in contact with? Hot water. Let's say your noodle pot. Right, what is that? That's hot water. So then tavi remayim. Then you're going to put it through hot water. Now, Billy Ned will discuss much, much more about this, but there's basically two types of kashrut. There's something called the libun and something called hagala. Hagala is predominantly used with hot water. And libun, there's two types of libun, libun kal, libun chomer, that's used with heat, fire. How do you know which one to use? So you got to figure out how your pot got affected. If it got affected through water, the water, the hagala, is going to be your mode of kashering. If it got affected through heat, then it's going to be through libun. That's what the Torah is telling us over here. So it seems to be a mitzvah deraisa. It comes from the Torah that if you have a pot that is soiled, either from macholas asuris, like the story over here, or from basa or chalav or chametz, this is the process you go to get it purged. The Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, daf ayin hey, the Gemara goes through the whole detail. The Gemara writes like this, Tanu Rabbanan, Halakech kli tashmish min oiv digachav. If a person purchases, person buys, gets a kli tashmish, a utensil used for eating from a guy, so it depends. Dvar mishalini shtamish behen, if it was never used, the guy never cooked anything in it. So then matvilin, all you have to do is tevil it, ain't tirim, no problems. Why? Because there's nothing absorbed into the pot. The guy never used it. It sat in his cabinet. There's no belias, there's no absorption that went into it. So all you need to do is tevil it. Let's say it was something that the guy used only for cold. Let's say he had a coffee, not coffee mug, he had glasses. And all he ever used them was for cold. He put cold, whatever it was in it, never anything hot. So then, all different types of cups and things related to that type of usage. So then, medichin, just clean it out. You don't have to, again, there's no need to kasher it because there's nothing to kasher. It can only be absorbed, the treif belia, through heat. There's no heat over here. That's an example. A guy wants to give you his spoon. And he says, I only use a spoon to eat milk and cereal. That's all I ever used it for. Assume you can trust him. I never used it to eat hot soup, milk and cereal my entire life. So what's the problem? take the spoon, wash it off. There's nothing gets absorbed in it. You just wash it off. Make sure you wash it thoroughly. There's no anything left on it. Even again, there's nothing treif about milk, unless you're chayshish, she actually has pig's milk, which could be a machalas asuris. Wash it off and you're good to go.
Do you have to be concerned how he washed it up? I mean, he might have washed it up.
Okay, so that's a secondary issue that we have to deal with. How, what he did with it, how the dishwasher and the dishes affect. 100%. That's a much more complicated issue that hopefully we'll get to at some point. Meaning, this is negated to Pesach also. For example, there's a big discussion amongst the poskim, do you have to kasher your becher? Now, no one puts hachametz in your becher. I never heard anyone that puts chant in their becher. But chant could fall into your becher. Not on purpose. It's sitting on the dining room table during your suda. You don't know if some kid pushes it and knocks something over. Next thing you know, there's a hot piece of deli roll sitting in your... It could happen. But even if it doesn't happen that way, what happens when you wash your dishes? You put them all together in the same sink and you pour hot water. Well, some people, right? These are some of the issues that the Achranim talk about. Let's talk about glasses. We'll talk much more about these shaylas. Let's say your Shabbos glasses that you use to drink. There's only cold goes in there, right? You put cold drinks in it. Water, soda, whatever else you're drinking. So why do I have to kasher those? So perhaps the reason why you have to kasher them is either because very nice, you don't intentionally put, you know, hot chalent into it, but you can't guarantee A, that someone didn't accidentally put hot chalent into it, and B, what happens when you wash these things? This is the old issue with the Starbucks coffee, how they were washing things, and this is something Belineder we will have to deal with. But just strictly speaking, if the kli is only used for cold, there should be no problem. Again, this is very important in your house. Many shaylos that come up in one's house and they're trying to figure out, oh no, my milchik spoon touched the fleishik. What did it touch? If there was no heat involved, you're okay. If there was nothing that was hot, I mean, if you took your fleishik spoon, and you used it last night to have hot cholent with meat, and you had it the next morning with your cereal, that's fine. Because what's the problem? The spoon was full of hot fleishiks, but it never came out when it went into your bowl of milk. Your milk was cold. Now, if you took that same spoon and stirred your coffee with milk in it, we got bigger problems. Right? Those are classic shaylos. But this is always important to note. You solve half the problems when you get this down. That it's got to be some form of heat that's going to absorb the bliya and then cause it to come out. If there's not heat on any side, there's no problem. So that's what the Gemara says over here. Everything's cold, just wash it. Again, everything has to be washed. You can't have any mamoshes. There can't be any substance left on it, because then you're eating the substance. So let's say, for example, you would take that spoon that you used for chalent and you didn't wash it off well, and there's still a little residue of chalent on the spoon, and then you scoop up your milk, and you're eating basar b'chalav. That's a real problem. Again, a lot of the things today, we clean things much better than they did back then. We have various options of how to clean things. Even though I have a dishwasher at home, my stuff does not come out clean. Maybe I pack it too much. I don't know. When I used to do dishes by hand for all the years I didn't have a dishwasher, everything came out spotless clean. Now I put it in the dishwasher. Every week I spend more time rewashing it after it goes into the dishwasher. So it could be it's not a good dishwasher. That's one shot. It could be we're jamming it too much. But today, you got to give them a little space to breathe. But today, we have much better. We'll discuss this halacha. We'll always worry things aren't washed clean. You know, today, you could debate. You know, we wash things pretty clean. We have a lot of different methods and we have. So there's tons of exceptions, exactly. So we have things that are sharp. Then we have another exception, the things that are kavush, things that stay in something for a long time. That was what we spoke about a while ago about the sherry cask. A while ago, I just listened to this shit, it was over 3 years ago. That's a while for me. 3 years ago, we spoke about the sugya of sherry cask, because the schnapps sits in the casks, and the wine sits in the casks, even though there's no heat. That's another thing called kavush. If something sits for a long time, it can also get absorbed into water. Then you have things that are sharp. That makes things very complicated. That's a davar charif. So there's a lot of variables. Again, this is why this is just an intro to kashering. There's a lot that will hopefully, as much time as we can, deal with all the different issues. So what does the Gemara say? So things that are cold, just toivu. Says the Gemara, what happens if dvarim she'nishtamish b'nidei chamin? Let's say it was used for heat, through heat. Kigoyin hayoros akumkusin u'mechame chamin. Let's see if things that were used to heat. So then magilin umatvilin. You do hagola and you toivel them. If they ain't tarim and you're good to go. Note the lashon of the Gemara. First you kasher, then you toivel. Does the order matter? Let's say, for example, I'd go to a garage sale. And the guy is selling pots and pans at a great price. I figure, you know, no problem. I learned the sugyas. I know how to kasher. I'll buy all these pots. I'll kasher everything. Save myself tons of money. So now I have to kasher and I have to toivel it, because I bought a kli from a guy. Is there a preference to the order of what I have to do first? Do I have to first purge the kli of its machalos asuris and then toivel it? Or does it matter? I can tovel it and then purge it. So what's the lashon of the Gemara? Magilin, first you kasher it and then you tovel it. We'll see there's a taisvis that points out that doesn't matter. There's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch and Yerodeh Kuf Chaf Aleph. Does the order matter? Again, these shals are not that negeya because most of us don't buy pots and pans at garage sales. I think there are people who still do it, but it would be negeya if you were to do such a thing, then you would have to know which order should go first. Should you first kasher it and then tovel it, or the order doesn't matter?
I think it also happens for people who are
Yeah, Balei Tshuva, that's 100% right. When they find out that they have all these things at home, or even more creative, a Gerish and his Geyer. There's a big discussion amongst the Paisim. If a Gerish and his Geyer, does he have to retoivel all his Kalim? That's a big discussion. The Darkei Tshuva has a discussion. Another Acharim discuss. So he's got to kasher everything, and he's got to toivel everything. So there would make a difference, the order that he would write, 100%. That would be Negeya as well. So says the Gemara, so if it's through fire, what's fire? Shvudin v'achsolois. That's the spit, you stick it into the fire. Barbecue grill, that's fire. Now, a grill pan, it depends if there's oil in the pan. Let's, for example, you're making pancakes, so then normally you say, that's fire, right? There's no liquid here, but it depends how much oil, or perhaps butter or something else that goes into the pan. It's not just fire. A barbecue grill is straight up fire. That's, you know, kuli alamayde, that's R. But the question is something like a grill pan, it might depend on how you're making it. So the Gemara says, fine, so that you tell them. The kulon shenishtamshim and actually yatvil. Let's say you used any one of these kalim before you toiveled it. Ushala yagil, before you did hagola, ushala yalbin, or before you did libun. You used it before. We'll see hopefully a little later tonight. Let's say, for example, one day you're at home and you have a milchika spoon. And you accidentally take your milchika spoon and you stick it into hot fleshes. Okay? It's got to be kashered. So you put it on the side, you say, fine, I'll kasher it tomorrow. You want to know, can I now use this with something cold? Because we mentioned earlier that things are only a problem when there's a heat connection. So I have a treifa spoon now because it has both mixed fleishiks and milchiks, but I want to have it for something cold. So me'ikar adin, it's mutter. Because again, what are you worried about? The spoon itself is mixed in basa b'chalav, but that concoction of basa b'chalav will only come out once it's exposed again to heat. So if I were to take that questionable spoon and have cereal, it should be no problem. Yet the Ramon Shulchan Aruch writes, no, you can't use that spoon. Why? Because we're afraid you're going to use it for something hot.
And the food stuff that you put it in.
So that we're going to have to get to also. What's the status of the food? What's the status? Every time you trave something up in your kitchen, there's always two questions. What's the status of the kli? What's the status of the food? Mamish, a few hours ago, someone called up with a real doozy. This was a real good one. He took a plate of macaroni and cheese with tons of cheese and tons of milk and cream cheese. I don't know, it didn't sound that appetizing to me. And he heated it up for a minute and a half in a fleishiga microwave that was used within 24 hours for meat. That's like, wow. It's like, you know, can't get more worse than that, right? So now the question is, A, what's the status of the food and what's the status of the microwave? So you... That's the question. That's what Blinette we're going to discuss hopefully next week and the following week. How do you deal with the microwaves and how do you deal with all these things from a kashering, from a Pesach, Blinette, discuss it. So these are some of the shots. But that's the worst of all situations. The question is on the food and on the microwave. So you always want to know what's the status of the food and what's the status of the microwave. So technically, if I have a questionable, let's take the spoon case. I had a milchika spoon and I stuck it into hot chant, right, with meat in it. So now it's treif. It needs to be kashered. I want to eat it for. I want to use it to stir chocolate milk. I want to use it to have cereal in the morning. So technically, it's mutter, because whatever that concoction is now in the walls of my spoon will only come out once my spoon is again exposed to heat. So Rama says in Shulchan Aruch, you're right, but we're afraid that you'll use it for your breakfast and then you'll use it for your coffee. There's nothing stopping you from using it for hot, and then when you're going to use it for hot, it's all going to come out. So mi'ikar adin, it would be mutter, but we don't allow. So the Gemara says, let's say you took a utensil that should have been kashered and you didn't kasher it. So the Gemara says there's two braises. Tony Chod, the one braise says aser. Aser, can't. V'tani idach mutter. So we have a steer of two braises. One braise says using a kli before kashering it is okay, and one braise says not okay. So the Gemara tells us another very, very important rule in basa b'chalav taruvis. So the Gemara lekasher. Hakam and Dama noisim tam lefkam aser. Hakam and Dama noisim tam lefkam mutter. These are also magical words when you learn the sugyas in Yeridaya. Something called noisim tam lefkam. Because what do we just say? That when a food absorbs into the pot, it gets the tam. But there's also something called tam pogum. The tam gets ruined. It gets affected. It becomes, it's pogum means it's no longer desired. So therefore, Zakti Gemara, if it's noisim tam lefgam, so then it's not a problem. So if you hold noisim tam lefgam, so then there's no problem. Why is it noisim tam lefgam? Because it becomes stale. those blias are not enjoyable blias anymore. It's no longer basa b'chalav blias. It's stale old blias that no longer present the problem. So if you hold noisy tam lefkam is mutter, so you don't really have to kasher, because those blias get stale, and those blias that get stale don't count. So stale blias are not an issue.
They don't count after 24 hours.
Ah, we didn't see that yet. Oh, we didn't see them after 24 hours yet.
Because
that time, because that time doesn't count for time. Now, we didn't see yet where 24 hours works. The Gemara is a great kasha. If there's such a thing called noisin tam lefkam, so why do you ever have to kasha in the first place? If you're telling me now that blias get stale, so just let the blias get stale and I'll never have to kasha anything. Well, let's go back to the story of the Gemara by Midjan. When they came back with these utensils, there was nothing in the utensils. They were empty. They probably were old because they're in the middle of a battle. They probably weren't grilling chicken during the battle. They must have grilled chicken 3 days ago, a week ago, and now the Jews came and captured it and took it home. So that's nois in tam lefkam. Those are stale blias. So why do you have to kash it? So frak di Gemara, if you hold nois in tam lefkam mutter, if you hold that stale, old blias are not a problem, how do you ever have to kasher something? It's stale. It's old. Let it get old. Says the Gemara, you're right. Midaraisa, the only thing that's a problem is if the pot or the blia was within 24 hours. That's what we translate to be a bas yema. We'll see it's really machlokes rishonim, but everyone knows this, right? This is every Jewish house, you know this thing. Within 24 hours, not within 24 hours, right? That's what we call a bas yema or a ben yema, which means that these blias are fresh blias. They were within 24 hours, meaning I had a fleshik, a pot that less than 24 hours ago was used for hot fleshiks. Within that same 24 hours, I put in hot milchik, so now I got fresh, not stale, these are fresh blias that mixed together, tam ki ikr, I got a problem on my hands. So says the Gemara, okay, great. So if you tell me after Ben Yoima, they're no longer stale, so why don't you just wait? Why do you have to kasher? Just wait. Wait a day, and you'll never have to do anything. Instead of having to do Libun and having to do Hagola, just wait till they become stale, and once they're stale, they're not a problem. Right? The Gemara, So why do you have to kasher? Just wait. Says the Gemara, Gzeira Kedera Shein Bas Yoima, Rishim Kedera Bas Yoima. Says the Gemara, no, not so fast. It's Gzeira D'Rabbanan. You're right. Technically, after 24 hours have passed, there's no Issur D'Oraisa of Tam Kikar on your pots. It's not a problem anymore. The blias automatically become pogum. They become stale. But we're worried. Not everyone is such a big lamda. Not everyone knows how to calculate. Not everyone knows the math. So we're gonna assert everything, even though it's only mid-rights, it's not a problem. That's what it's called a ben yoima versus an ain't a ben yoima. Everyone knows, whenever you bring a shayla to the rabbi, he always wants to know, when was the last time it was used? That's his gemara. Because if it's a ben yoima, we got bigger problems on our hands. If it's an ain't a ben yoima, so it's nice and tam lefkam. It's really a less of a problem, but it's still rabbinically assered, and therefore the rules are different. Now, what does it mean to be a ben yoima or a bas yoima? So everyone knows 24 hours. Right? Everyone knows that, right? It's not what Rashi says in Avodah Zarah. Rashi in Avodah Zarah says, what's a bas yoima? Shebisha bo oivdi kachav mayoim, the guy cooked it today. Avo bisha bo etmol, left the guy cooked in it yesterday. Right? Let's say you go to the garage sale on Sunday, and yesterday the guy cooked in it treif. So now you got a kashrut. Says Rashi, but let's say yesterday he cooked in it, but he cooked it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the garage sale is called for Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. Says Rashi, but if there was Linus Laila, but if the night passed, Shuv Kishapolte Bitav Shal Acher Eina Yalufkam. Rashi learns. Right, Rashi learns not 24 hours. Rashi Shita is, it's nighttime. There's something about nighttime. If nighttime elapsed, the nighttime somehow purges and makes it nice in time of Kam. We don't paskin like that. That would be a great toiva, but we don't paskin like that. We paskin, you need to have full 24 hours. So we hold the only way the time becomes stale is if 24 hours elapsed from when it was absorbed. But according to Rashi, Taisus discusses at length over there in Avodah Zarah. Taisus discusses, you know, this pshat and Rashi. The Rashi holds it's not about hours. It's about the time of the day when the blias were absorbed. We mentioned that there's a Taisus over here in Avodah Zarah. The Taisus discusses what do you have to do first? First kasher, then tovel. First tovel, then kasher. Taisus says it doesn't matter. Whatever order you do, it doesn't matter because they're two different procedures. Kashering is getting rid of the blias. Tefillah is injecting kedusha in it. You can inject kedusha into a treif pot. Treif just means you can't eat it. While toiveling means you inject kedusha into the pot. Okay, this is the mikar, basically, for the entire sugya of what we call today Hagolas Keren. One of the basic kashas that people ask is what happens when I kasher my kli. Again, we do this all the time in our homes. We chafe up a spoon, chafe up a fork, so we kasher it, no big deal. Do you ever make a bracha when you kasher it? No. When you toivel, you make a bracha. What's the difference? Fakert. Hagolas kelim is more mefurish in the Torah than tefilas kelim is. Tefilas kelim, we got to break our heads trying to figure out where the Torah is alluding to it. One of the drushes are b'mei nida. Oh, the waters of Anida. Oh, what's the waters of Anida? Oh, that's a mikvah. So it means a kelim mikvah. Like, you know, we got to figure out where the Torah is meram is. But here the Torah is black and white. Put it in a fire, put it in the water, and yet there's no bracha on hagolas kelim. This is one of the bomb kashas that the mefarshim deal with. Why was there never a bracha instituted on the procedure of kashrut? So I found over here, Rabbi Ephraim Gribat writes in his sefer, he found an Haggadah Shel Pesach that was printed by, I think if I'm reading it right, it sounds like the Jews of Hoidu, which can be India. Turkey. We usually translate Hoidu to be Turkey, at least in the sugya. He writes over that they had a nusach for Haggadah Kelim. So apparently, they made it up, or we all missed the boat. Now, when we did the sugya of Turkey, we mentioned that it's very questionable who lived in Hoidu, who were the Jews of India, how religious they really were. The Kavachayim times, they were very religious Jews. Other people say, who knows what they were doing in India? Yeah, it would be in the Gemara, it would be in the Rishayim, someone. Rishayim asked the Kasha, so they clearly didn't have the gifts. But he says he found this Haggadah that came out. I think that word is Hoidu, if I'm not mistaken. There's another word that says line 2 Haggadah Shel Pesach number 5 says before I'm giving Haggadah Shel Pesach I found a new Haggadah every year, right? For people that study Haggadah, the excitement is which Haggadah is going to come out this year. There's always a new Haggadah coming out. It's always exciting, you know, maybe with pictures, I don't know. There's always an exciting, I personally, as a rule, I use the simple Haggadah. I think the Maxwell House Haggadah, that's what I use in my house. I find that when you start bringing other things, you lose the text. You start with all the pshatim and story. It's beautiful. It's great. I like to use the strict text. Keep it to the basics. What does it say? And then I got to figure out what to do with it. When you read all these other perushim, there's so much, you're overloaded. You forget what you're supposed to... The best Haggadah to use is the Rishayim Haggadah. Why? Because the Haggadah was written by the Tanaim and Amoraim. It's like a piece of Gemara. When you learn a piece of Gemara, you don't buy, you don't jump straight to the most contemporary person. You learn the Rishayim. So it's a beautiful Haggadah from the Rishayim. It's beautiful. It has the Ritva. It has a whole list of Rishayim. It's not so popular. People don't like learning it. There's not so many stories. There's not so many, you know, varts, but it should be learned like a piece of Gemara, I think. But in any case, every year I don't know what the new Haggadah this year is. I'm sure it's out there. I have it in my Oitzar Chachma, so I can search my Oitzar Chachma. I can put it in a search word. So the most Svarim are predominantly the most on Chumash. There's a million Svarim on Chumash. But when you put the word Haggadah in, oh my gosh, lists and the Haggadah Shel Pesach of this guy, that guy, his cousin, his uncle, every guy and their uncle wrote a Sefer on Haggadah Shel Pesach. Because everyone learns it. If I write a Sefer on Masechah Shavuos, how many people learn it? Everyone reads the Haggadah. There's no two ways about it. Everyone's got to read the same Haggadah, so it's a good sell. So there's so many beautiful Haggadahs that are out there, so much to say. So Dr. Ephraim Greenblatt, that he saw a Haggadah that I think came from India, and there it had some form of a text for the Nusach of Haggadah's Kelim. And he writes, V'kasha, Halimat Sinu Bracha, Haggadah's Kelim. Why? L'vishay mitzvah l'shtamish b'kelim elu. Because there's no real mitzvah to use them. Haggadah's Kelim is what we'd call a matir. You don't have to do Haggadah's Kelim. If you want to, so then you got to do it. So what's the follow-up question? So it's Tefillas Kelim. Who told you to go to Beth and Beyond to buy a new Kelim? Right? We're going to talk about Shechita Nikra Gid. So he writes, Oy, Shezer Rak Lav Loy Lechel Trefes Kinikra Shem Avarch. One of the other answers is this is really just to prevent you from violating a lav. If you don't kasher your dish, you're going to be eating Macholos Asuris. So this is not a positive commandment. This is really just there to ensure you don't violate an Isser of the Torah. And then he quotes from the Orchas Chaim, who writes, Shekosef is tam lo me'im avarchan al-golo, kishar ha-mitzvah, shem de'ef shashtam shem kemach ha-doshim. The first reason is, you know why we don't make a bracha? Because you don't need to do it. Who told you that you need a kasher? Ve'in tzorch l'hagel ha-nikelem. Nim tzad alav mitzvah l'shtam shem. It's not a mitzvah to do what you're doing. You don't have to. You don't have to go to the garage sale and buy trefa pots. You can keep the Jewish pots and not have to kasher anything. That's what he writes. So the Sefer Tvua Shemesh, he over here in number 6, he quotes over here, he doesn't understand what this means. The reason why I don't have to make a bracha on a galus kelim is because I don't have to kasher my kelim. Do I have to buy new kelim? I don't have to go to Beth Mion to buy new kelim. I can use my grandmother's old pot. So why do I make a bracha on tefillas kelim? Following this logic that if I don't have to do something, it doesn't become a mitzvah, so then tefillas kelim is also not a mitzvah. I don't have to buy new kelim. So he says, no. He says, what do you mean? I could always just use goyims. I can borrow from the guy. Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that if you borrow from a guy, you don't have to tithe it. So he says, okay, that's not so practical. You can't live life like that. He says, fine. I can buy a kli that was owned by a Jew. We paskin, you only have to toivel a kli if it was at some point owned by a guy. But if it goes straight Jew, you don't have to. So why can I do that?
It's also not
so light, you know. It's, in theory, it's nice, but not very practical. So therefore, he thinks obviously there's more of a push to buy new things than there is to kasha. And then he quotes from the Rabbeinu Menoyach, the commentary on the Rambam, who asks this kasha. Number 8. He writes, we'll come back to number 7. He writes, Rabbeinu Menoyach Perikei Melchus Chametz Matzah asks him, Toimer, Amayla Mevarchin Lametzis Agola, Keich Mevarchin Hashem Mili De Pischa. He says, again, it used to be everyone kashed all the kelim before Pesach. It was part of the Pesach prep. So why don't you make a bracha on it? Now, what does it mean over here? Just like you make a bracha on the other Pesach stuff. You make a bracha when you clean your house? No. You make a bracha when you burn chametz. Make a bracha, make the bracha b'dika, goes on that. It's not clear what he means by mili de pischa. So what's his answer? Mishum do ha'ev shebekeim chadoshim ublai agol asagi. Because you don't need to kasher. Buy new. So he says over here, I don't get it. V'esh l'hakshis, lo mehikshu abeinu menoich davka agolos kli chametz lehikshu al agolos kli yisr. Why do you only ask when it came to Pesach? Why don't you ask Stamazeh? If my milch gefork became treif, became mixed in, why don't I make a bracha when I kashrut? Why do you only ask Pesach? What? Or, this is the first time you actually have to do something. I can just throw it away. I don't have to do it. So he writes over here, number 9, a whole new chiddush. He says, you know why you don't make a bracha on kashring? Because kashring is really an avera. Something went wrong here to bring about this situation. Meaning, you botched up something, not on purpose, but you got milchik v'fleishik together, which is why you're kashering it. Which is technically an aveir. Again, you didn't do it on purpose, you accidentally dropped the spoon into the chalent. But the reason why we are where we are was because some form of a transgression took place. The only time this kash is a kash is by chametz. I didn't do anything wrong. So, kosh baruch decided, I'm not allowed to have chametz. Or I buy from a guy, for that matter. So therefore, he's arguing that the reason, he says that even by a guy, the maisa is machalas asuris here. Even though for the guy it wasn't usher, but there is davar isser here. So therefore, that's what he wants to tie into why we don't make a bracha. Very hard to understand exactly what that means, because there's no assumer of it. They were all accidents. No one did anything on purpose. Yeah?
If somebody brings you a gift.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's tevila.
That would be tevila. Again, if we'll talk actually about giving gifts with kashrim. Hopefully we'll get to that. The darkei tshuva. Yeah. That's a different thing. Knife that has holes in it, that's the end of the Shulchan Aruch talks about, that you stick the knife into the ground because it has too many holes, that you can't kasher it properly. Things that have a lot of holes in them are hard to kasher because the dirt gets, the mamushes get stuck into the holes. This is the big tumult about dishwashers. Before Pesach, there's always this big shaila, can you kasher a dishwasher? Big shailas. Why? Because if you ever looked inside your dishwasher, there is so much dirt there. There's real food there. That stuff doesn't come out. It stays there. Now, someone told me, I'm not familiar, that in the big catering companies, they take them apart because they need it. The hotels can't function unless they have a dishwasher. So what they probably could do is, they probably have separate Pesach dishwashers, but if you want to kasher, you might as well take it apart and sit there getting every little piece of dirt out. That's chametz be'en. That's real stuff. Now, I always thought that stuff was pogum. That's gross. Someone told me, no, the stuff is, still edible. It's regular. You can have pieces of real chametz in there. I don't know. I always thought it was nifkam. I always thought that stuff was pogum to the nth degree. I would have thought so. I don't know where. You see in the bottom, it's...
The screen is clean.
Yeah. So that's the problem. The knife has a lot of holes in it, so it's hard to... So therefore, we stick it into the ground. Hopefully, we'll talk more about this as well. So the Daki Tshuva writes, why don't you make a bracha on Hagolah? So he says because tefillah is actually a mitzvah. Masha'inkin ha'golah she'i mitzvah sloisaseh. It's not a positive mitzvah. It's really a negative. K'may nikar ha'gid v'cholav de'ein v'cholav de'ein b'varchim. When they used to do nikar ha'gid, we stopped doing it for many years, and we started it again in the famous Tumul in 1936. In 1936, they made a ban on shechita in Poland. No shechita. That was a big problem. So the way they got around the ban was they said that if you do shechita, you can't waste any parts of the animal. So for hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, Jews threw out the whole part of the Gidon Osher. They didn't bother doing nikar, very complicated how to clean it out. They never bothered. They just they sold the whole thing to the guy. At 1936, when the rule was you're not allowed to do it, so they had to bring back nikar agid. So Reb Chaim Moshe was the Gadol Hador at that time. He wrote a whole letter to bring back nikar agid. The Chassidim were against him. The Babavar Rebbe was against him, and other Chassidish Rebbe said, no, we have a Messiah. We don't do Nikar Agid. I don't care. We're not doing Nikar Agid. So Reb Chaim Moshe had to convince the Chassidish to join his side of things. So Nikar Agid is not really a mitzvah. Nikra just means if I want to eat this piece of chicken, I got to make sure I get rid of all the isser. So it says it like a tshuva. That's what you're doing by kashering. It's not a mitzvah. It's I have isser here. If I don't do kashering, I'm going to be eating isser. So that you don't make a brach on something like that. That's the argument that the Daki Tshuva presents. Yeah.
How would they use
the whole animal. They said you have to use you can't sell off parts of the animal. They used to get rid of it. They chucked it off. They either sold it or threw it into the garbage. They said you can't do that anymore. So now they got to figure out how to make usage of this piece of the skin. So they would allow shechita as long as you use the whole animal. So they have to take the gid. Now they have to clean it out and use whatever they can use. So some of it they couldn't do. I guess as much as they could use, they had to clean up. It was a big tumble. This was already 1936. This was already towards the end. But Reb Chaim Meiser was the big one behind trying to get people on board. But the Chassidish, they were very Misera-based people. Misera was for, I think, hundreds of years, maybe 1,000 years. We stopped doing Nikar Gid. You have to be a real expert to know how to clean it, to know how to do it well. That's the argument of the Daikei Chu. Halach l'maisa, we don't make a brach. But it's definitely a good question of why don't we make a brach. So let's talk about Pesach now. Do I have to kasher my kelim? Should I kasher my kelim? Should I buy new kelim? What's the halachic consensus? If you look in Shulchan Aruch, and we'll see it in a few minutes, there's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch discusses how to kasher your kelim for Pesach. So clearly it was done. Does that mean we should do that? We should not do that? What, where does that leave us? So if you look in the Sefer Yisoy D'Sherish HaAvoida, he writes, you've got to be very careful. You've got to warn all those that are God-fearing Jews. We're on page 2, number 10. That what? You really shouldn't cash your kelim and use them on Pesach. Oh, why not? Those are the metals that the Torah says are even kasherable. It's not practical to clean them well enough. Again, we're talking about hundred years ago. Today, most of our kelim are pretty clean. We don't really, have big cracks in the middle of our bowls where you have bread stuck in it. But back then, that was the case. And therefore, argues he said v'sherei shavoida, you can't really ever do a good hagola. If you're not doing a good hagola, so then it's not good to use them. He writes v'yoyse toiv. What's better? Lechel bePesach b'kares udlubkoi shal klei cheres chadashim. Buy new. V'hayoyish on the choishes b'vashel b'abdogim. Let's say you had these handles, spoons that you used for cooking fish, yachshu idei libun, that you could kasha, kistam, yoyri, kivir, ben mismar, megam, palm, taloi, be'inyan, she'enei, moyo, lo, agol, klai, can't do agol, maybe you could do limun. We'll believe that to talk more about that in the following weeks. Now, what does it sound like to you? That he's not against kashering, he's just against it because he can't get everything out. But let's say you have a spoon, our simple spoons. You can clean the spoon. It's not. There's no major holes in your spoon. So l'chayre, he would hold. There's nothing wrong with kashering it, and that's what the Tzvua Shemesh points out. He says that l'chayre kondis yishayv yishayv avoda. He's not asering kashering. He's asering kashering because it's just not practical. But if you have a situation where it's very practical, you have a bowl that there's nothing. There are women that have that. There are certain bowls they like cooking with, and it's chametz, so they want to use it for Pesach. So they'll kasher it, no problem. So you say, oh, you're not supposed to kasher. No, he's not saying that. He's saying you can't kasher certain kelim because they're difficult. Other people say, no, you can't kasher because do you know all of Hilchas kashering? Do you know all that you need to do? How to do it? What to do? So that's why some people are against kashering. Others say, no, that's not the taina. You'll go to the rabbi, you'll go to the shul, someone will teach you, and there's no problem. So that's what many people assume, that you could kasher things, and that we do kasher things. But again, if it's something that's questionable, either the material is questionable, which we'll be able to discuss next week, or it's questionable because of holes or cracks, so you can't kasher it, then it's probably better not to kasher. Mishtabura writes number 12 when discussing a knife. Whole discussion how to kasher a knife. So the Mishtabura says, I have a great idea. Buy a new knife. Says the Mishtabura, Mikomok and Misha Efshaloi, if you can afford it. Mitzvah min amuv chashik nechadosh lepesach. Buy new knives. So some Achrayim say, it doesn't just mean knife, it means everything. If you can do it, go for it. Why bother dealing with Hagola? Hagola is a heter, but there's a lot of variables. So if you can buy new. Why not? So it's a better option. That's why most of us today don't kasher. I think it's becoming even more less and less. I think the communal kasherings are less and less attended. They're still doing it. Right. They're still kashering. Yeah, interesting. Everyone's doing it. Yeah, today it's very, very hard to find. Today you only find, I think the older generation still does it. They come with their little box and their four bowls and their two, and they cash. Most of us, we just buy new. We buy new, we buy plastic, as we mentioned. But Lamaisa, the Mishmur does say, if you have those things that are questionable, if you can, Mishmur writes, Mishav Shalat, if you can afford it, it's probably better to buy new.
Can you cash on Yom Tov?
They talk about it. They talk about it. If you can kasher things on Yom Tov, the question is that considered tikkun? If you're fixing the kli, I think a shayla. If you can toivel something on Yom Tov because you're fixing it, you're making it usable. I think that's a shayla that comes up later on. And Magen Avram will hopefully quote a little later is somewhat relevant to that shayla. So Shmuel Kamenetsky, he lives in our generation. Let's see what he writes. In number 13, he writes. This is Rabbi Kleinman in a sefer quoting from Shmuel Kamenetsky. You can kasher without a problem. Don't feel guilty. It's probably better to have Pesach dishes. Okay, that's what I could have said. That's definitely true. So Shmuel Kamenetsky is basically telling us, like we said 10 minutes ago, there's nothing wrong with kashering, putting aside the Yisrael Vishayish Ravayis Chashashas, which are not so negated today. But Lamaisa, if you could, it's better. Pashit, of course it's better, because you have less Shailas. Because if you don't have to do Hagala, you don't have to worry if you did Hagala properly, you don't have to know if there's any Mamashas, because you have all Pesach. Now, flip side, comes along the Nitta Gavriel Tzinner, and he says even a bigger chiddush. He writes, Yesh mahadrim lahaga kol ha-kyofois v'amazloga shel Pesach. Some chassidim, they kasher their Pesach dishes every year. Now, let's think about this for a second. They kasher their Pesach dishes every year.
Yeah, because the last day they
eat kibros. Oh, get to that. So that's not what he says. He says a different reason. Listen to this reason. He says, Mishum d'shchichich shenofu la'aretz b'Pesach ha'ava. Because it might have fell on the floor last Pesach. And anything that falls on the floor is treif. If you ever go to a chassidish person's house, they will not eat anything that falls on the floor. They will not eat anything that touches water. Matzah that touches water, they will not eat. They'll throw it out, which is tamazeh pelagadol, because even if you choishish for a gibrox, there has to be some form of heat. Okay? That's a kasha. But if it falls on the floor, they will not touch it. It goes in the garbage. Now, let's think about this for a second. Just Pesach. Now, let's think about this for 1 second. What's the chashash? You worried about mamoshes on the spoon? You worried about blias? Is your floor hot? Like, I hope not. I can't imagine that's what the chashash was. So I don't understand that. I guess the chashash is there's mamoshes. So you, well, crumbs, right? They're worried about your spoon fell on the one place where there was a big crumb. But that doesn't to kasher. But that doesn't help to kasher. Mamoshes, I don't get it. So he writes in the bottom, the footnote, he writes, Kain shemati shekain nogum ezi gedoilim. So I heard many gedolim do this. V'kinira hamakor lezehu ma'aril halchas hagala huva beli rabba. Demnofa dover men ashochan ayag vienu klal echel. Something falls off the table, don't eat it.
Are we talking just about metal kelim or?
No, it sounds like anything that falls on the floor is off limits. If at you're food, at the food, right? So I guess the same. Right. So again, I'm just trying.
About the China plates. If the China.
Well, again, so China, you might have a different problem about whether or not it's absorbed. Right. It can be kasher. That's. So I don't get. I don't understand. He writes over v'hurak chumra ba'alma. That's definitely true. He said, "Yeah, this is beyond mine."
He's teaching us manners.
Yeah, yes, it's good manners, but I don't think they do it during the year. It's a Pesach chumra. He writes over here from the Admir Misanz Klausenberg, from the Klausenberg Rebbe. Shemati shaminik shemnofa kli al earth bePesach yedichi uheita v'sagi. The Klausenberg Rebbe said, "What are you talking about? Wash it off." Now, again. We just learned this earlier tonight. Washing off works for things that are mamashes. Things that are hot are kashered. So I don't see how you need to kasher your spoon if it fell on the floor unless there was heat on your floor. So I'm not following. But okay. But that's apparently what some people used to do. Now, we mentioned earlier this evening that if you have a utensil that needs to be kashered for whatever reason, milchik to fleishik, fleishik to milchik, chametz to pesach, tarfus to kashrus, whatever it is. So the Ramah writes in 15b, Hago, kol kli atzorich libunei hagol, any kli that needs to be kashered, osu l'shtamash ba'afilu tzayin in b'lei hechsher, you can't even use it for cold, which the chayrish shouldn't be a problem, because if I'm using it for cold, none of the blias come out. The ma'is of the paiskim, Mishnah Berurah explains, it's exerid rabboni, may come to use it for hot. Okay. Now let's talk about b'dievetz. I don't think this has ever happened in any Jewish house in the world. But let's say Leil Seder, you're sitting at your Pesach Seder and you're looking at your Yavta Shulchan Aruch already, and you're looking at your soup bowl and you realize your wife served you soup in the Chametz Tikka Shabbos bowl. I don't think this would ever happen in Jewish, in our world today. I don't think it would ever happen. But it happened at the times of the Echaret. What would happen now? Would you have to dump the soup out? Would you have to run away? What do you do now? So let's look at Mr. Brewer. It's an unbelievable Mr. Brewer, 15C. Says to Mr. Brewer, he's talking about a Kli Cheres. Now, Kli Cheres is uncasherable. That is a before Shapasik in last week's parsha. Says that what do you do with a Kli Cheres? You got to break it. That's a shot with the China, right. How do we treat China today? That's the gate to both Tfilas Kalim and Kasherin Kalim. So Mr. Brewer writes over, if you have a Kli Cheres, Tolei Mahani Hagolo, the hesek. You can't kasher it. Yeah, you got to put it away. Or for that matter, if you have your you have a pot that you just didn't kasher. He was talking about a thing that's not kasherable. But let's say you had a dish which you didn't kasher, like most of us don't. Right? You had a pot that you didn't kasher. That's why I picked a soup bowl. A soup bowl is usually only used as a klisheni, right? Because your soup bowl is, you have the soup pot that's on the fire, that's a klirisha. You then take from the soup pot and you put into your bowl. That's it. It might be klishishi if you have the ladle, as we spoke about when we learned the sugya of Bishlam Shabbos. It might have a din of a klishishi, but at least it's a klisheni. So we have a principle, things don't cook in a klisheni. So if things don't cook in a klisheni, so they can't be a problem of bliya sisser because things don't cook. Which then we'll have to talk about in a different share. I don't know if we're going to get to it next week or a third week. So Mr. Rui writes, what do you do? Yesh l'hokel. Again, your wife serves you soup in the Shabbos bowl. Right? Can't get more chummas than that. You, every Friday night she puts noodles in the soup. And now this week she gives you that Pesach dikka noodles, which we know what that tastes like, right? And you're looking down and you realize yourself, oy vey, this is a Shabbos bowl. What do you do? So says to Mr. Brewer, don't yell at your wife. It's the first thing not to do. That's what I would suggest. She's probably tired and stressed as it is because it's Pesach. No mitzvah to yell at her. He writes, Yesh l'hokel af b'kli cheres b'makam hefsin neruba u'minia simchas yomtif. It's not the end of the world. Imhu eina ben yoyma. Because first of all, again, it's an eina ben yoyma. Most of us, it's an eina ben yoyma. Shehu noisin tam l'fgam. There's only one problem. There's machloikis mechabin ramah. Do we say noisin tam l'fgam by chometz? The mechabin says yes. According to the Mechaber, nois and tam of gam is true by chometz also. So if you take your chometz dikka pot, sit it, let it sit for 24 hours, cook in it for Pesach, no problem. It's nois and tam of gam, the food's fine. The Ramos says, no, we're machmer. We're machmer nois and tam of gam, even for chometz. So therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, but the Eved, b'shasat chak, when it already happened, assuming your bowl was not a ben yoyim, which it's no way it is, most Jewish homes were already Pesach like 3 weeks before Pesach, so we don't have to worry about that. Right, we'll have to see. Maybe our Jewish pots fall into the heter of the Chacham Tzvi that they haven't been used for 12 months. That's the famous heter from the Chacham Tzvi. So the Mr. Ruh Paschal is B'dyevet, it's okay. Now, what I want to get to is, let's say you're not kashering your pots. Okay, you could, but we don't. What do I do with them for Pesach? Where do they go? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, very interestingly, Shulchan Aruch writes, K'tei Rishal Cheres. Again, he talks about a case of Cheres because those things were not kasherable. We're going to just talk about regular pots that we decide not to kasher. Says the Shulchan Aruch number 15. K'teir shel cheres shenishtamish b'chametz kol hashana. You used it for chametz all year long. Afilu oisim shoisim em daisa umini kamachim. You used it for good, heavy, you know, porridges, real good chametz. So what do you do? Mishamshim heitiv. Clean them well. Be'inyan shel yeh chametz nikar behem. There should be no recognizable chametz. Umutal ha'shoisim lachar Pesach. Nishtamish b'hem. Leave them around and use them after Pesach. Be'im b'min v'im shalim b'minoy. But what do you do with them on Pesach? Listen to this. Umatzniim b'mokim. Umatzniim b'pesach b'mokim tznua. Store them away in a hidden place. She'ena roga leilcham. They don't normally go. Put it in a cellar somewhere in the basement where you don't frequently walk. Kadesh lo yavli shtamish b'hem Pesach. Because what are we afraid of? You're going to go downstairs. Rav Hirsch Shachar says over in Isha, every year he gets a shayla from a guy who decided he's going to be the hero. He's going to cook breakfast chol hamoed. And he doesn't know his way around the kitchen. So of course he goes to the wrong pot. He takes the chametz, takes a pot out, and he thinks he's going to save America by baking breakfast, and he traves up the whole kitchen, right? He says every year he gets a shayla. There's always one guy who thinks he's going to be the nice guy, give his wife a break, and he ends up making things all worse. So we're afraid that what are you going to do? You're going to go down to the basement, you're going to take your chametz, take a pot, and you're going to cook in it. Now again, we mentioned b'di'eved, if it's a cliche, the food doesn't become aser. But we don't want you doing it. So what do you do? You hide them. Where do you hide them? Says the Rama. You put the Chabad says you put them in a place ulatzniyam avteach to hide the key. It doesn't say hide the afikayim. You hide the key. How many people do this? None of us do this. Where do we put our pots? We put them in our kitchen. We put them underneath and top here and there. How do we get around it? It's mamish against the Mechaber. So we all have this thing called tape. Who made up tape? So they quote B'shem Rosh Hamizalman and Rav Moshe, they said this thing called tape. What's the purpose of the tape? The tape is just to be a hecker. It's supposed to remind you, hey, no, pause. Right, we joke when we'll talk about it again, we talk about it in the past, when we talk about Mechiras Chametz, so you put the little sticker, Mocher LeGoy. I always say it should be written in Spanish. The guy doesn't speak Hebrew. He's the one who's supposed to know what it says, not us. So you should write it in English maybe. But the point, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, as does Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, is just supposed to remind you. It's supposed to be a hecker. They're like, oh, stop. So therefore, you're supposed to tape it, put a sign up. But Lamaisa, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you're really supposed to have it out of the kitchen. None of us do that because it's not practical. As big as our homes are, we're not schlepping it. What I wanted to get to, and we didn't get to it, was can you kasher things back and forth at a whim? Let's say you have a really, really terrific spoon. And it's milchiks. but you want it to be fleishiks today. So you kasher it back and forth. Play the back and forth game of kashering things back and forth. So we'll see. So there's a Magen Avraham who says you can't. There's a Chassam Sofer that says, but if you're going to kasher for Pesach, you can sneak it in. Meaning, even though normally you can't switch the gender, but if I'm kashering for Pesach, then I can switch the gender. So then this is a whole list of shailas about how do you deal with that. And I don't know if we'll talk about it next week, but next week I really want to get into is what can be kashered and what can't be kashered. And then hopefully the following week we'll try to figure out how exactly to kasher things, both for Pesach, both for Chametz, and for Bli Yisrael. And we'll discuss a little bit more the details of how to go about kashering things.